UK Wine Show, show number 122, Goldtroption. On this week's award-winning wine show, we're talking with Johan Hart and Manfred Bright, both the producers in the Goldtroption near Peasporter, on the Mosel River in Germany.
And in the news, pubs face tough times, Scotland propose under 21 ban, and French harvest is down.
G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 122 for the 12th of September 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show we're talking with Johan Hart and Manfred Bright. Both are winemakers in Goldtroption. Goldtroption is a small amphitheatre vineyard facing due south in Peasporter on the Mosel in Germany. I went there a couple of months ago and was very impressed with the wines. We talked with Johan and Manfred about this part of the Mosel, what it's like growing grapes on crazy steep slopes, and how are they adapting to the changing markets. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Pubs in the UK are closing at a rate of 36 a week. That's according to the British Beer and Pub Association, the BBPA. It's a staggering 5 pubs every day and sounds shocking, but does follow a rising trend. In 2007, there were 27 closures a week, the year of the smoking ban in England and Wales. But in 2005, just 2 pubs a week closed down. Pubs are feeling the squeeze of the failing economy. Not only are the costs of running a pub increasing, but fewer people are drinking in pubs as consumer confidence wanes. The British government's not helping matters with its current proposals to wrap pubs up in more red tape, such as statutory codes of conduct and higher taxes for beer. According to the BBPA, sales of beer are now at their lowest levels since the Great Depression of the 1930s and could drop even lower if tax increases continue. The campaign for Real Ale Group, Camra, is calling on the government to introduce a minimum pricing policy in supermarkets to help reduce the gap between shop and pub prices. The average of a pint of lager in a pub is now £2.82, whereas in the off-trade, global lager brands were found to be on sale for as little as 57p a pint. Camra say heavy discounts in supermarkets are keeping people away from pubs, and that's resulting in pub closures.
I've always felt the UK was a bit funny when it came to their pubs. When I lived in New Zealand, and even Australia and the US, many people are not as loyal to their local pubs. If you were meeting friends, you'd often have them over to your house, or you'd go to theirs. Sure, people meet in pubs, but in England it's almost like an institution to meet people and catch up in a bar. But with the ban on smoking, I think there's been a small but noticeable sea change, with many people staying in. I'm not sure if you're staying in and having friends over, or you're not being as social. If you're a smoker staying indoors, it means you can smoke and have a beer or wine and be very cheap about it. Maybe staying in is the new going out. It looks like it's going to get even tougher for some people in the Scottish market. What's going on there, Jane?
Well, Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, has faced a backlash from a number of drinks organisations after his proposal last week to raise the age for purchase of alcohol from 18 to 21. The proposal was one of 15 published in a discussion paper that aims to change Scotland's relationship with alcohol. The Portman Group, which acts as the social responsibility body for the UK drinks producers, says the plans to demonise alcohol in the country won't solve the nation's alcohol problems. It claims that countries adopting a similar approach have failed, and that attempting to tackle problems by raising prices or restricting availability would be untargeted, unfair, and ineffective. The Coalition Against Raising the Drinking Age in Scotland, or CARDAS for short, has also attacked the proposals. The coalition includes the Wine and Spirit Trade Association, the Scottish Grocers Federation, and the Scottish Retail Consortium. The government proposals, which are part of a health bill, are subject to an ongoing consultation on alcohol misuse in the country. If they're agreed upon, the new laws could come into force next year.
What's the last story, Jane?
Well, on a different tack, back to wine. The 2008 French wine harvest will be smaller than in 2007, due mainly to poor weather, but also the ongoing uprooting programme and fewer vineyards. That's according to Viniflore, the National Fruit, Vegetable, Wine and Horticultural Office. Production is expected to reach 43.6 million hectolitres, almost 5% less than last year's 46.5 million, which was already considered lower than the average of around 55 million hectolitres. Rain and hailstorms fell on the majority of regions throughout France in July and August, and a cold snap in late March, early April hit vineyards from Bordeaux down to Provence at a critical time for the buds. Regions that can boast a decent 2008, though, include Alsace and the Jura, and Champagne and Burgundy. There's about 12,000 hectares of vines that are being uprooted per year, which represents 800,000 hectolitres, so a fair chunk of the decrease this year. That's it from me this week, but don't forget you can get more detail on these stories at our website www.3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. Another light vintage from France is no great story if you're a wine drinker. With Australia still under pressure from the drought, wine prices aren't going to come back fast soon. Supply problems are one of the reasons why Origin has moved its sourcing of wines from Australia to Argentina this week, and I think the trend will continue. But let's hope that Italy has a good crop, and New Zealand had a savalanche earlier in the year, so it's not all doom and gloom. Next up, we have the Spotlight. I hope you've been enjoying the Spotlights. When I first started them, I wasn't quite sure what I was letting myself in for, but we seem to have fallen into a nice wee pattern of a book review once a month, and also the monthly poll once a month, which gives us 2 to 3 weeks a month to look at some topic in a bit of detail. I want to add another regular feature to the Spotlight. This time, it's looking at terroir. In fact, UK terroir specifically. From what I can find, there's very little organised or published work on UK terroir. So, I want to investigate it. Partly for my own education, and partly because I'd like to determine whether growing grapes truly can be a profitable and viable operation in the UK. So, around once a month for the next 6 months or so, we're going to be looking at the UK terroir and trying to understand what it means. Hopefully it won't just be specific to the UK, and you should be able to take what we're learning into other wine regions of the world. But this week, we're going to catch up on the background of what I think terroir is in a series called Sun plus Earth equals Terroir. This section is available on our website, 3050.co.uk. Just go through to the UK Wine Show section, and it's on the Spotlight series on the left-hand side. So here we have Sun plus Earth equals Terroir. It's often said that wines are an expression of place and time. This is an interesting idea. It implies that wine is a unique combination of geography, place, and climate, time. Some think the French term terroir sums this up. Terroir is claimed by many to be the magical combination of soil, climate, and wine somehow. Now, do you believe in magic? I don't. The following modules are dedicated to teasing out the effects of climate and soils on wine. On the website Sun and Earth equals Terroir, I have a number of interviews that we've recorded for the show over the last couple of years, and you can just listen to the pure interview there. But let's get stuck into geology. At the heart of all wine-growing regions are the soils and the rocks underneath. But it's the rocks under the ground that sets the scene for what's going on above the ground. Some rocks are harder than others and weather differently. Harder rocks often form the hills, while softer rocks weather faster and fill the valleys. So, rocks beneath the ground control the altitude, orientation, and composition of the landscape. The layer of the land can also affect the number of climate issues. For example, in southern England, a southerly slope vineyard will receive 30% more sunlight in October compared to a flat vineyard. Not only that, a slope is also beneficial, particularly if you're in a wet region, as much of the rainwater will run off, minimising how much water absorbed by the rocks, thus available to the vine and grapes. Rocks that have many small pores can hold water, protecting the vine from periods of drought, while rocks that have cracks throughout allow water to pass through them, allowing the roots to stay dry. For example, heavy clays have high porosity, hold water, but low permeability, the ability to pass water. This results in water-soaked roots in wet countries, but in a dry country, they can hold enough water to let the plant have a good drink. Chalk usually has high porosity, holds water, and permeability, passes water. So in wet regions, the roots will stay dry, and should a drought occur, the vine does have access to water. But there are three types of rocks. These are sedimentary, igneous, and metamorphic. Sedimentary rocks are formed by layers of small particles forming into solid matter over time. These include sandstone and limestone. Igneous rocks are formed when volcanic eruptions, fast-cooling magma creating basalt and rhyolite, while slow-cooling forms other types of rocks such as granite. Metamorphic rocks are rocks that are heated and may be subject to high pressure from being buried within the earth. These heated rocks create hornfels and granulite, while high temperature and high pressure create slate and schist. That ends this week's look at geology. Certainly, as I said, south-facing slopes get more energy towards the end of the growing season compared to flat regions. That's why such a region as Goldtropschen, with its natural south-facing amphitheatre, are in a better position to ripen grapes than the flat areas of Peasepoorter. Next up, we're going to be talking with Johan Hart and Manfred Bright, both producers in Goldtropschen, and talking about slopes as well. Let's have a listen to what they have to say. Hi, I'm here with Johannes Hart from Reinhold Hart and Holger Bright from Manfred Bright. How are you guys?
Pretty good. How are you?
How are you?
Excellent. You're Holger. Say hello, Holger.
Hello.
And say hello, Johannes.
Hello.
Excellent. We're actually in the Mosel at the moment. And to me in particular, where are we? We are
in Peasepoort.
Peasepoort. And we've been just looking around the vineyards at Goldtropschen. Excellent. We thought we'd just talk a wee bit about Goldtropschen and about the Mosel in general. But what exactly is Goldtropschen, you know, from your point of view? Because you guys are both producers on the Goldtropschen.
The Goldtropschen is an area here on the hill in Peasepoort, and it's one of the best wine areas here in the Mosel Valley, and it's one of the most popular ones in Germany.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit unusual in that it looks like an amphitheatre type thing. Is that sort of the idea? And it seems to be generally facing south.
Yeah, it's exactly south-facing. It's with the amphitheatre character. It's really red-protected and quite a unique character in the whole area, in the whole Mosel region, truly, and making quite unique wines.
Why?
It's very ripe wines, which is quite unusual for the Mosel. Mm. But at the same time, it keeps its elegance, which is so typical for the Mosel, producing quite rich wines.
We went for a bit of a wander around the vineyards, about 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, and by gosh, they're steep, aren't they?
Yeah, you get used to it when you're working in it.
Yeah, you guys kindly took us up on a monorail. I think it was a monorail. We got to the top, and then it started sliding back down. I jumped off, and the poor old guys had to walk back up.
You get used to it, but you should be careful with your step. So you might fall, and if you stumble, you might hurt yourself, and yeah. Nobody wants that.
Do you have many accidents out here?
Not with locals. Tourists.
People who don't know what they're not. They haven't got feet like mountain goats. One of the things about the Mosel, and particularly Goldtropschen, is perhaps the soils. What sort of soils do you guys have?
We have slate soil here, which is quite rare and regarded as one of the finest soils if you want to produce high-quality wines. So you have, for example, you have some in the Portugal, in Douro Valley, and it makes a very fine mineral character to the wines.
Mm, it's the acidity and the minerality, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a combination of both, and with the added fruit, it makes a huge complex wines, and especially long-living wines.
Yeah, I really notice that minerality. It seems to play a lot with the acidity, which is quite interesting. I think I can now tell the difference between Rieslings grown on slate and Rieslings grown on other soils. Anyway, quartz. I was at the VDP tasting yesterday, and I was really picking out the differences between the two, which is quite surprising. You know, my palate's all right, but I didn't think it was quite that good. So the soils themselves, they seem to be slate. Is it all slate all the way through the vineyard?
It's definitely mostly slate. It's made up, like, say, 95% slate, added with small parts of quartz. So really, just a little bit. But it's truly 100%, close to 100% slate.
Okay, and how many people are in the Goldtropschen? Because one of the weirdest things I have trouble getting my head around is you've got a single vineyard, but it's divided up into a load of different people.
We talked about it earlier in the car. It is quite difficult to say the actual number of the people who own property in the Goldtropschen area, because some small families do, but it's about 200 people who own property here.
And if they grow the grapes in the Goldtropschen, they can put that on the bottle, can't they?
Yes, yeah. That's what you put on the bottle, that's what you're proud of.
I'm still trying to get my head around these naming conventions in Germany, but so it seems to be that, you know, you say Riesling and then you can say the vineyard that it's from. Is that correct?
Yes.
Even though the vineyard can be divided up into hundreds of producers making hundreds of different wines, and you have your own producer name on there as well, which I find that quite confusing. I'm used to sort of, you know, Spy Valley, New Zealand, Sauvignon Blanc sort of thing, and to have like the name of the vineyard and then the name of the producer as well, it's just a wee bit different for me. I know it's a bit common in Burgundy as well.
The quantity we produce is a lot smaller than big cooperatives. I mean, we're just small family businesses usually. And we produce what we can do with local staff. We don't have any big employees. We just own small properties. And then we produce just the essential, what we can do from these small areas.
Do you know what sort of average hectare or acreage that people have?
A good average is always if you have in between 5 and 6 hectares of vineyards.
Yeah.
To make a good living out of it.
To make a living, you need 5 to 6 hectares.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the value of the land? How much do you pay per hectare?
See, that's what I was saying earlier. We're small. And if you buy fields, we don't calculate in hectares. We calculate in square meters. So the price for 1 square meter is about around about 20 euros.
20 euros. So what does that work out to be a hectare?
1 hectare is 10,000 square meters.
So a hectare is about 200,000 pounds.
Euros. Yeah.
200,000 euros. So you need about €1 million to get a plot of land that's sustainable?
If you want to start from the scratch, buy the fields, you also need a house, you need a cellar. So this, most of the families own it for years and years, so you own most of it, but you always have to focus on the future and invest in the company. The still existing part should be more improved over the years.
How did it become so fragmented? Is it like Burgundy with the Napoleonic inheritance laws, or
it's exactly this thing that it was always inherited to the children and split up between the children of the former owner? So we ended up sometimes, and because in former times they had very big families, so my property was split up between my grandparents into 7 children. So our property comes from a far bigger estate formerly, and today it's become much smaller. We are trying to increase size again, but of course it takes time.
Yeah, sure, and it's quite expensive, the lands. Obviously, because you're south-facing, you get a load of sun, and the hills are so steep, so you must get a lot of, you know, energy from the sun hitting the grape varieties. But what is the climate in Mosel like? Would you consider it continental? Would you consider it maritime? Probably not maritime.
Probably during the summertime, yeah, it's pretty much maritime. But we have mild winters and usually very hot summers. Mm. So temperatures in the 30s and mid-30s are quite easily reached. What also comes to our climate, to the small microclimate in the vineyards, is again the soil. The slate soil or the slates are heating up during the daytime. So usually it's kind of a heating system. They're heating up to 50 degrees Celsius. And this heat they give away during the night. So even... yeah, after dark, you can have a nice walk through the vineyards. You also have the reflection of the river. The gold traption areas are located on the bottom of the hill, so all the sunshine is reflected from the river.
Yeah, that's the Mosel River.
Yes. And so you have pretty much great climate for the wine growing.
Fantastic. One of the things we noticed when I was walking through the vineyard was that you seem to have 3 different ways of trellising the vineyards. You've got double goyette, where you've got the trunk, and then you've got 2 spurs of wood coming off, and then another system where they seem to be in a heart-shaped, for some reason, and tied together. And the third seemed even stranger. It was like a big black round steering wheel that the vine was growing out of. What are those 3 methods, and what's the idea behind them?
Yeah, the heart-shaped is a very traditional system that was used for centuries. Today, it's a little bit out of fashion. It's not regarded as the highest quality system, producing high yields, not the best balance in the wine for fruit and leaves. Then the new... how do you call it?
I call it a black steering wheel.
Yeah.
It looks like a tractor steering wheel to me.
than the new steering wheel system, so-called. It's a new invention. It comes actually from the idea of this old traditional system, because it's a single post system. You can work very easily. All the handwork is done in the vineyard very easily, because you don't have to go each row up and down again, which is, of course, true for the wire trailing system.
Oh, yeah,
which is, of course, much harder
work.
The hills. And so you go sideways through the vineyard.
So it's easier on the
way. It's much easier to work, too. Yeah, and the new drainage system, it's a little bit better in canopy management. It's better balance between fruit and leaves.
I was talking to Holger earlier, and you were saying that you lose 20 pounds in the summer working the vineyard.
Yes, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it looks like you've been working pretty hard over winter, though, to keep that up. Get your body. You don't want to fade away, do you?
No.
It's all the sausages that you've been eating.
No, loads of wine.
Is it wine?
Yeah,
is it?
Wine and... The living with wine is also enjoying everything. It's not only the wine itself. You're enjoying the food with the wine. You're enjoying cheese. You get out a lot. You've got lots of opportunities just to focus on the enjoyment of life.
Mm.
It's all coming with wine.
Yeah, and you don't need to go to the gym, because you're up and down the hills all the time.
Yeah, my belly is big. My legs... it's pure muscles.
Yeah. Okay. I won't look.
Trust me.
What sort of system do you have? The wines, the grapes on the wires, or which system do you use?
We have 95% on the wires. And
so
some
up and down the hills.
Have
you thought about removing them and using this new steering wheel type contraption, so you can go side to side and maybe not lose as much weight over summer?
Quality wise, the wire system is still the best, from my personal point of view.
Yeah.
And with this trio wheel system, it's not the worst quality you can harvest, but it's not the best effect that you can have.
Yeah. I think one of you guys was saying earlier that it's useful, makes the vineyard work a wee bit easier as well, in terms of pruning and all that sort of stuff.
It's less intensive work, and you just prune them once and that's fine, and after then... The only good thing, which I personally see it, is that the grapes are lying on top of this wheel. And we got a lot of sunshine, so you've got a very nice flavor in the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only positive effect.
Pease Porter itself, Gold Troption's on the side hill of Pease Porter, the town of Pease Porter. Pease Porter, when I told some guys in the office that I was heading off to Pease Porter, they were going, oh no, lots of really bad wine. Pease Porter itself doesn't always have as good a reputation as maybe Golden Troption. Would that be fair enough? I'm almost getting evils from you now.
No, unfortunately, it's true. It's very true that in the past, Pease Porter hasn't had the best reputation in bigger markets. Everybody who came to Pease Porter over years and years knew that we have very high qualities here. But unfortunately, some of the people sold the wines to bigger wineries, and they were responsible to giving a bad reputation to the wide world outside of just pure sweet plum wines.
Yeah, like Liebe or...
Unfortunately, yeah. You won't find a bottle of this in Germany, but that's a weird thing.
Can you still buy it overseas?
Yeah.
Are the grapes grown in Pease Porter, or is it just named Pease Porter?
It's growing around the area of Pease Porter, which is today you're allowed to name your wines Pease Porter in quite a big area. So Pease Porter itself today has maybe 300 hectares of vineyards, but actually the area you're allowed to name it Pease Porter, it's about 1,300. So it's far bigger, and that's... big problem today, and we are working on it, solving it, but it takes a lot of time.
And Holger, you've got grapes in the Golden Troption, and you've also got grapes on the other side of the river, on the flatter land on the other side of the river.
Yes.
What's the difference between the two areas?
As we said earlier, here you harvest just pure quality on slate soils.
It's all Riesling.
And it's all Riesling, and it's all very intensive work. While on the other side, we have more clay soil, some gravel soil, and there you harvest different kind of wine, earthier, Rieslings, some other varieties like Müller-Thurgau, Those grapes are planted more on the other side. So, but there you can use machines, which make work less intensive than here on the steep hills.
I was talking to one of the guys I came out here with, and he seemed to indicate that the top end of wines coming out of Peas Porter, not a problem, everything's fine. The cheaper end of the scale, the flat area, not a problem as well, because the wines aren't as good a quality, but you can machine harvest, as you were saying. But the middle ground, where you're on still on quite steep slopes, and there, but you're not getting all the sunshine that perhaps you get in the Golden Troption, that's quite hard for people to make it work. We were talking, actually, Holger, weren't we? And you've actually grubbed up some vines and sold the land.
Yes.
What was the reason for that?
It was hard work in this hill working there. It was facing the east, so you had no sunshine in the afternoon anymore. It was just average quality, and it doesn't make any sense working intensively on getting a high quality product if nature says you cannot have it. So if you're just producing average quality with high effort, it doesn't pay off at the end. And it's not worth putting such a wine on the market. That's one of the reasons why areas have problems with their reputations. If you produce average quality, you can't make a good name out of it. And so I was saying I'd rather sell it probably to somebody else who doesn't make any wine there anymore and leave it like it is and just keep up the name.
Yeah. Effectively, you removed the vines and it was sold off not as a vineyard at all.
No.
Okay, and that worked quite well for you, at least. Yes. It was, yep. And now you're probably, instead of losing £20, you only lose 15.
That's true.
That's a bit rude, sorry about that.
I can cope with that.
Okay. How's Peas Porter and Golden Troption? What do you think the future is for you guys?
Future looks good. In our opinion, we are experiencing new markets, a lot of interest lately of many people around the world, and more and more recognize what quality is grown here, again, so to say. The longevity of the wines, the purity and opulent flavor of the wines here in Peas Porter, it's quite unique and makes these wines so special.
I noticed when we were wandering around the vineyard, there's Golden Troption, and then there seems to be another vineyard right in the middle of the Golden Troption called the Dümmer. What's going on there? Why is it so different to Golden Troption?
It's at the foot of the vineyard, of the Golden Troption vineyard, and so, of course, you have some kind of erosion through all these years, centuries, actually. The Golden Troption is planted with wines for nearly 2,000 years now. It was actually planted already by Roman viticulture. So the Dümmer at the very foot of the Golden Troption has accumulated a lot of fine slate soil down there, so the soil is richer, produces even stronger wines than the Golden Troption, maybe not as fine, but richer in character and so different, and that's why there's a different name for it, of course.
Okay. All right, then. I think I'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, guys.
You're welcome.
You're always welcome and peaceful.
Cheers very much. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I found Golden Troption a fantastic place to visit with its crazy steep slopes and traction engines that you need to get to the top. It was both picturesque and the wines were fantastic. Next week, we stay in Golden Troption, but we're going to be finding out about the wines of the Mosel and in particular Golden Troption. That's pretty much ends this week, apart from this week's quote, which is by Benjamin Franklin. He lived from 1706 to 1790. Benjamin was a scientist and a writer and was president of the American Philosophical Society, an American founding father, and his picture is printed on some of the US currency, as well as having a number of towns and warships named after him. So he's quite a famous person. Benjamin is quoted as saying, "Wine makes daily living easier, less hurried, with fewer tensions and more tolerances." I say cheers to that. And until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.